Welcome to the Queen's Code for Relationships, the Secrets of Men in Marriage. And tonight is an introduction to our course that is a much updated version of what used to be called Celebrating Men in Marriage, which is one of the most advanced courses that we offer here. And I'm excited because I'm going to be giving you some of the information that we cover in that course to help everybody. It certainly clears up a lot of mysteries. And how the call will go, if you're familiar with the Maestro system, this allows us to have a quiet classroom, and it also allows you to raise your hand to ask questions, which I'll be taking questions in the last 10 minutes or so that we have planned for the call. We might be able to have a little bit more than that. And first, what I want to do is just tell you some of the other things that we cover in the Queen's Code for Relationships, if that's something that you're considering doing. And it does have a prerequisite. You have to have done the Queen's Code Workshop and the Queen's Code for Life in order to be in this course. And the reason for that is because in the Queen's Code for Life, you're going to have sorted out your most important values and what do you need in your life to be an embodiment of that, to be a consistent expression of that. And that really is what sets the foundation for your relationships. Once you know what you need to be the best version of yourself, it sheds a very different light on what you then are going to need from your partners. So so the first thing I just want to say is that the Queen's Code for Relationships, you might notice, has an S on there, relationships. So this is really the introduction, if you will, to partnership. And my study of men and women for the last 24 years and sorting out this whole predicament of gender and all the places where we make assumptions about each other and then we're upset because the other person doesn't act the way that we think they would if they truly cared about us. To me, the sorting out of all the gender stuff, the point of it is to be able to have partnerships, because all those misunderstandings, all that confusion, all the hurt feelings, all the experiencing being dishonored and disrespect, it just throws us right out of any chance at partnership. It's just a game over. So all the work that we do on gender, for me, the point is to then be able to partner, whether it's a partnership between a man and a woman or two women or two men, whether it's a romantic partnership or being part of a family or as a friendship or even a partnership between parents and children or in the workplace. So what we teach in the Queen's Code for Relationships is applicable to all forms of partnerships, not just romantic partnerships. And tonight, obviously, with what we told you we're going to be working on, I'm going to be focusing on romantic partnerships. So some other things that we work on in the workshop, I'm just going to breeze over these really quickly, and then we're going to get into the main content. One of the other topics included is the effect of unheard instincts, the effect of herd instincts on how we choose our partners. So this is one of the things that human beings are being largely irresponsible about, that we are, in fact, herd animals, and there are major concepts and instincts that are shared by herd animals that have a tremendous impact on the decisions we make that we think are pure choices, and we don't know how compelled we are by the effect of the herd and all the ways that that puts pressure on us to make certain decisions. We also look at the fantasies and illusions that we have about marriage. And there's 11 of them, and they all sound wonderful, just absolutely wonderful, like happily ever after, and the one, and having it all these wonderful ideas that when you look at the effect that they have on us. So the behaviors that and the beliefs that come from those fantasies and illusions, you actually find out that they are partnership killers. They're relationship killers. They're sanity and balance and happiness killers. But they're widely perpetuated and insidious. They affect everything beyond romantic relationships. We have happily ever after illusions in our businesses and our careers, you know, for example. And another topic, a series of topics that's in the Queen's Code of Relationships has to do with the realities of marriage and partnership that can't be escaped. And the funny thing is we think we can. We think, you know, I'm so smart, it won't be like that for me. Or I'm so educated, it won't be like that for me. Or I'm so transformed, it won't be like that for me. Or my favorite is, oh, no, my partner and I, we're soulmates. We're meant for each other, so we'll never have those kinds of problems. Those are for other people. And what we look at in the course are the realities of marriage that are going to happen no matter how smart or educated or transformed or in love we are. And the sooner we face those realities, the more effective we're going to be instead of pretending they're not there. Another topic that we work on in the Queen's Code for Relationships is helping you to choose better partners. So these would be romantic partners or business partners or people you want to team up with in an effort in a community, for example, how to choose them in a way that is more fitting, and I literally mean that, a better fit for who you are and what you need. And this has a double effect of when we choose partners who aren't a good fit for us, they can't win no matter what. They suffer from not being what we need them to be, and it's really cruel. It's really cruel to not make better selections. And the other part of that conversation is how can you see the partners you already have in more empowering lights? Because unbeknownst to us, it happens pretty automatically or unconsciously, we judge the partners we have by impossible ideals and by a very limited picture of how someone could fulfill or express what's most important to us. So that's something else we work on. Another topic on the last day of the Queen's Code for Relationships is the difference between having had a wedding and creating a union. So one of the definitions of marriage is a union. And many people crave union. They crave that experience of such a high degree of alignment and appreciation and being seen and being known by each other. And we're not prepared to fulfill that. We're not prepared to make that happen. It seems like an ideal, and we're not prepared to deal with what that experience might cost. There are certain choices you have to make in order to keep moving towards union, or you'll never get there, or if you have one, you'll bust it up. So that's another set of topics. And then a very popular set of topics, which we're going to be touching on a little bit tonight as we move into talking about commitment, and those are the 12 things that make a woman the right person to marry. But they're not just the 12 things that make a right person to marry. They're the 12 things that make a woman a good person to partner with, to create a business with, to have an enterprise with. There are even things that the 12 things that make a woman an awesome mother to her children. So it's much more widely spread than just marriage, but where we learned it from was by listening to men talk about this thing they call the right person. And this will get us right into the conversation about commitment. I've asked a lot of men, do you want to be married? And In the beginning, it shocked me what their answer was, and then it just became, oh, yeah, that's their answer, because almost all men would say yes. And I grew up with the myth of men being noncommittal and thinking that you had to, you know, hoodwink a man into marriage or bribe him into it or threaten him into it or be pregnant to get him into it. But I grew up with the very pervasive notion that men are resistant to marriage and they're avoiding marriage and they'll try to get out of marriage if they can. And so when I started talking to men about being married and the things they said about being married and how much they loved it and how much they envied men who were married, the single guys, it was really an eye-opener for me. And that's when I started just asking men randomly, do you want to be married? And almost all of them would say yes. And an interesting thing is that the few that would say no were very clear about it, but they had always had women in their lives who ignored that clarity, who thought, oh, well, when he knows me better, when he loves me better, he'll get over that. And much to their dismay, he didn't get over it. He was very clear he didn't want to be married, and he wasn't going to change his mind about that, but she thought that she could persuade him. So the majority of men, almost all the men who would say yes, they always, every single one of them, followed it up with some version of to the right person. Yes, yes, I want to be married to the right person. If I meet the right person, hopefully I'll meet the right person. When I meet the right person, I mean, they said it so many times in so many ways. And it was, such a surprise for me. And it set me on this whole trail of research of trying to find out, so what makes someone the right person? And there were 12 different factors that made someone the right person. And like I said in the quote that was at the top of the promotion for this introductory seminar, love wasn't one of them. Love wasn't one of the 12 things. Love, if there were 13 things, love would be on there. But love was just assumed. Love was, yeah, of course you want to have that, but it's not enough. And all of the items that make a woman the 12 things that make a woman the right person, depending on the man and his age and his stage of development and his experience, these 12 things need to show up in different degrees. There needed to be a longer or shorter track record for these things. Or sometimes if a man was younger, he didn't even know he needed these things until he got married and they weren't there. Oh dear, bad choice. So sometimes men discover these 12 things by them not being there. And so just to be clear that not all men could rattle off these 12 things. They've just discovered they needed them by the absence of them, or discovered they needed them because they lucked out and it was there. But most men are looking for at least some of these 12 things really consciously, really with a great deal of knowledge and specificity. So I'll come back to that. Okay, I'm just going to take a breath here for a moment. Ah, there's so many things I want to tell you. So first, just in case you don't know it and you're thinking about being in the workshop, I am leading it on May 29th and 30th and 31st in Dallas. And I don't lead this workshop very often. I led it once last year. And I don't know when I'm going to lead it again. And it will be filmed as the other workshops that I'm leading this year in Dallas. And I just invite you to participate if that's something you'd like to do. And at the before the we take questions, I'll let you know a promotional code you can use in order to get a bonus if and when you register into that workshop. All right, so let's dive into these questions that I posed in announcing this. The first one was, what does a marriage commitment mean to men? And this is one of the biggest misunderstandings that I find between men and women, and one of the things that kind of baffles men, because our instincts, female instincts, drive us towards marriage. They like literally like cattle being driven towards a spring pasture, which where I'm living, I got to see that just the other day. cattle get driven right up the road out here where I live in Colorado. And female instinct drives women towards marriage, even when their conscious thought is that they don't want to be married. And it's very much about survival, which all instincts are, and the idea that I need to get a man and keep a man in order to have someone to protect me and to provide for me. And as you can see, this is really, really old, but our instincts are really, really old. So women are really compelled to be married. And for many women, if I love you and you love me, we should get married. That seems to be the decisive factor. So there aren't 12 things that make a person the right man. There's just one thing. I love you and you love me. We should get married. And so when a man says, yes, I do love you and I'm so glad that you love me, but no, I don't think we should get married, then he gets accused of being noncommittal. And I object to that. Single focus makes the male brain naturally committed, the testosterone-driven brain naturally committed to everything. Everything that a man chooses to do, he's committing himself to. So it's the opposite of the myth of men being noncommittal. They're highly committal. In fact, what we've seen is that it's women who are noncommittal, that be our cave woman within, as we call it, being on the constant lookout for a protector and provider, is all too prone to literally jump horses in the middle of the race because the one that she supposedly committed to appears to be weakening, and that's very frightening to her. And instinct will have her gravitate towards a man that she perceives as stronger. And it's sad, and it's devastating to relationships because this instinct is operated it's operational unknown. It's not like she's conscious that this is what's driving her actions. So the question of what does a marriage commitment mean to men, it's been fascinating to listen to men talk about this, and you'll get to in the Queen's Code for Relationships. We have a panel of men like our other workshops for women only. And it's really astonishing to hear how much it comes from their compelling desire to protect and to provide for, and that commitment of marriage to a man means that he's taking on the responsibility for that other human being, for that woman. And if she has children or he's planning on having children with her, then he's also committing to taking care of them. And when you listen to men talk about this, and I encourage you to ask them, you know, what does it mean to be married to you? And if they talk about, you know, taking care of, well, so how do you mean that? What does that look like? What do you think you're responsible for in taking care of your wife or taking care of your children? And as they express what taking care of means to them, it's really amazing. There's very common themes, and then there are these individual expressions that are part of his values, his individual values, and it's really beautiful. But it's going to end up in the realm of to take care of. And if you look commitment up in the dictionary, one of the definitions of commitment is to entrust to another, right? So that handoff in many marriage systems, you know, who marriage ceremonies, of, you know, who gives this woman to be married, and the father or the brother hands the woman over to the new husband, and there's a real sense of being entrusted, that the people who cared for her before are now entrusting him to care for her. And that's all part of what the commitment means to a man. Now, this leads to the next question of, who do men commit to? Who do men commit to? And like I was talking about before, men commit to the right person, or at least they're hoping that they're committing to the right person. And like I said, you know, of the 12 things that make a woman the right person, love isn't one of them. So let me give you a sense of some of them that are. And I just invite you, as you're listening, to notice what doesn't make sense to you and what does. Because we don't talk about these 12 things until the Sunday of the course, because after we look at the fantasies and illusions of marriage that trip us up and the realities of marriage that we need to have some strength and wherewithal and intelligence in dealing with, then what makes a woman the right person makes perfect sense. You're just like, oh, duh, oh, of course, yes, of course you would want that. But beforehand, it can seem like, huh, what, why is that important? So another thing I just like to say is that our culture, and this is actually different than instinct, instinct has a play in it, and culture usually just expresses instinct, but we have some interesting things going on in our culture. And basically, our culture has had women become not the right person. Our culture has been forming women for at least the last 40 years to be the opposite of the right person. So, for example, one quality in the right person would be that she doesn't emasculate him too much. And I add that too much part because men have an enormous capacity to tolerate emasculation. They have an incredible resiliency and heal themselves and come back and reengage even when something horrible has happened. But as you know, if you're familiar with the stages of development, as a man goes into the tunnel and becomes a king, his willingness to accommodate or put up with emasculation is reduced greatly, and he often will be done. Like, no, game over, I'm not going to do this anymore. And it's the demise of many a marriage. So not emasculating too much doesn't mean you never do, but too much. And each man is going to have his too much. Another quality, and this is one that we look at quite a bit, because it has all these different angles to it, but I'll give it to you now because it's really relevant to the next part that we're going to. So another thing that makes a woman the right person, and I would suggest that this, again, this applies in many contexts. It's one of the things that makes a person a good person or the right person to create any kind of partnership in. And what that quality is that a man experiences that he can give her what he thinks she needs. So let me say that again, that he experiences, or he thinks, that he can give her what he thinks she needs. So if you were listening closely, you would notice that I didn't say he can give her what she needs. That would be the simple form, right? He can give her what she needs. Nope. the fact of he can give her what she needs, that'd be great. But there's other layers. He's got to think he can give her what she needs, which means he's got to have evidence that he can give her what she needs. He's got to have succeeded in giving her what she needs. He's got to have won at that, as we've taught you so many times, men need to win. So he needs to think that he can give her what she needs. And then as if you're listening, you'll hear it was further complicated. It's not just that he thinks he can give her what she needs. He thinks he can give her what he thinks she needs. And this causes so much mischief. The difference between what she needs and what he thinks she needs can be a world away. Oh my gosh. So much mischief here. So, first of all, as most of you know, in our first workshop, in the Queen's Code workshop or in the Queen's Code book, we begin teaching women the importance of telling a man what you need, and that that's not a simple thing to do. You actually have to pay attention to many different things to successfully tell a man what you need, because besides timing, right, and wording that makes sense to him, he also has to be open to hearing from you what it is that you think you need. And unfortunately, part of being a strong person, part of being a competent, capable person, and this happens to women as well, a pitfall of that is thinking that we already know what people need. And we think we already know what they need from a variety of sources. So we think we already know what they need because of what we need, and we project that onto them. We think we know what they need because we've been around for a while, and we've drawn some conclusions about what all women need. Or we think we know what they need because we observed maybe our mothers or sisters and what they needed and decided that's what all women need. Or we think we know what they need because we've been listening. And this is one of the things that has derailed relationships so many times, is a man is courting a woman, and I'll tell you how that happens, and he's considering that she may be the one, and he's listening attentively to what it is she's expressing that she needs and she wants and she dreams of and her goals are. And he's listening very carefully, and he's sorting himself in or out. He's sorting himself, yeah, I can provide that. I want to provide that. Yeah, I'd like the life that includes providing that. I'm able to provide that. I could stretch myself and provide that, and that would be worth it. I want to do that. Or he's sorting himself out. I can't provide that. What it would take for me to become the person that could provide that? No, I'm not interested in that. I don't want to spend that much time in making money, for example, or living in Italy, or whatever it is. And he opts himself out. No, I can't give her what she needs. And this is further complicated by how unconscious this is for women. That we're often on a date speaking nervously. We're nervous. We have some fear going on. So like you may have learned in Understanding Women, we start chattering away to shoo the critters. And so we're babbling unconsciously, and we're going on and on about, you know, that trip to Italy, or our mother and our father, and the way that we were raised, and or how we've always wanted to go to the Caribbean. We're not quite sure where the Caribbean is, but we've always wanted to go there, and maybe even live there. And we just say stuff that, if you asked us, okay, is that in your plan for your life? When are you going to do that? Are you committed to that? We would say, no. But we don't know that the person who's courting us, the man who's courting us, is listening to us as if we mean what we say. And there's a very big problem right there. The assumption that we mean what we say. And we don't always mean what we say. We're not committed to it, right? This is, again, where the masculine tends to be more committed and speak more committedly, unless they're not on purpose because they're concealing, which is a whole other topic. But the feminine, we're prattling away, not knowing that someone's using that information to sort themselves in or out. So, so just this. So I've just told you two, right? Doesn't emasculate too much, and he thinks he can give her what he thinks she needs. Now, there's another way that he figures out what she needs, and this causes also a lot of problems. He figures that she needs what she has. So he figures she needs what she's done. So she's traveled a lot. He's going to assume she's going to travel in the future. And he thinks she needs what she has. So if he knows clothing, he's estimating the cost of what she's wearing. If he knows jewelry, same thing, knows how much that watch costs. He's got his own take on her car, if he happens to know where that is, her home, if he happens to have been there. And this, you know, can drive women crazy because you're like, wait a second, I bought that car because I could afford it. I bought this house because I could afford it, not knowing that most men will be looking at that car in their house thinking, can I afford that? Can I send her to Italy 3 times a year? Can I pay the mortgage on that house? Can I make the payment on that car? And this is the other way that he's deciding, can he give her what he thinks she needs? And not knowing that women have a lot of stuff that if you ask them, do you need that, they would say no. They would say no. And if you said, okay, so if you were married, would you expect your husband to provide that for you? They'd say no. Why would I do that? I already have it, or I can already afford it, or no, I pay my mortgage just fine. I already paid off my house. I don't need someone who can pay my mortgage. So, again, this is something that is happening in not out loud, not in a conversation. It's happening, being read into what's being said. And it can have many a man be smitten with a woman and be just bummed because his conclusion is that he can't afford her. So this leads into the next part, but let me say one more thing about this. Who do men commit to? And this has to do with some of the other things that make a woman the right person. And this may sound trite, but it's worth looking into. And the question of, you know, so who do men marry? And the simple answer is men marry their wives. If we're going to expand on that, men marry the women who are being their wives. So this goes into another big difference between men and women, where a woman will marry a man expecting that when he gets married, he'll instantly start acting like a husband. Like there's some, I thought this when I got married the first time. I thought their minister had like fairy dust and magic powers. And at I do, that my fiance would magically turn into a great husband. And so women expect men to improve with marriage, that their behavior will change with marriage. And if you think that, then you want to pay a lot of attention to getting engaged. Because for most men, when they get engaged, they have committed. They're now thinking of her as his wife and as himself as her husband. And how he behaves while he's engaged is the best indicator of how he's going to behave when he's married. And if you're not happy with that, you're in deep trouble. So a woman will think that a man is going to change when he gets married, and she's planning on changing when she gets married. She thinks when she gets married, then she'll start acting like a wife. So maybe after she gets married, then she'll take care of him because he will have paid the price for her to take care of them, of him. He will have made that ultimate commitment that now means he deserves for her to take care of him. But men don't marry the women who are going to take care of them when they get married. They marry the women who are already taking care of them, who are already supportive, who are already attentive, who are already congruent with their futures and supportive of their careers. So they marry the women who are being their wives because they want that to last the rest of their lives. They're not expecting her to change. They're hoping she won't. They're like, this is great. I want this to continue forever. Okay, so this goes into our next part, which I get such a kick out of this. Oh, I have enjoyed listening to men talk about this for such a long time and so many opportunities. And these two things go together. So how soon do men know that a woman might be the one? And what is the process for men committing? Okay. So, I'm sorry if I get such a kick out of this, but I really get such a kick out of it because it's so the opposite of who we think men are. And the way that women behave is incongruent with what they've expressed to us. So in answer to the question, how soon do men know that a woman might be the one? So might be is a good part of this. And how soon? What men have said to us is it's usually within 30 seconds. Sometimes they say a minute. Sometimes they say within the first 3 minutes. Most men who say within the first 3 minutes end up shaking their head and say no, actually it was in the first 30 seconds. So, and what I mean by might be, so in that moment, they're like, oh my gosh, right? So in that moment of seeing this woman across the room, looking into her eyes, meeting her, oh my gosh. What they say when they expand on this is that when they first meet a woman, basically they see how big the future could be. So the future already has a limitation. So when they first meet a woman, they instantly know, oh, this is someone I could be friends with, or this is someone that I'd like to take to bed, but nothing else will come of it. Or this is someone that would be fun to play with for a while, to have adventures in life with. She'd make a good girlfriend. Or, oh my gosh, this might be the one. So they see the possibility of a future where they spend the rest of their lives with that woman. Now, what happens after that is this process for men committing, and it relates back to the things I was telling you, so it should probably make sense by now. So what I'd like you to do is think about a puzzle. I'm assuming that most people have put a puzzle together, even if it was a small one when you were a child. But, you know, as we get older, you know, we go from a puzzle that has 8 pieces to a puzzle that has a lot more pieces and that ends up with edges. So if you think of that conclusion of those first 30 seconds, what it just strikes him is the way that they've expressed it. They just know. There's a certainty about it. So what that creates are the edges of the puzzle. So how big it could get. Oh my gosh, this could be the one. This could be my wife. This could be the person I spend the rest of my life with. And that possibility, the size of that possibility, creates the edges. And then what he's going to do is he's going to go about now seeing how does the rest of the puzzle fit in. So how does it fill in? And do the pieces come together? And if you meet a man when he's in this, oh my gosh, she might be it phase, and then you run into him again a few months later, and like, so what happened with that woman that you just met you were so excited about? He might shrug his shoulders and say, it just didn't add up. Or, it just didn't come together. Or, the pieces didn't fit. So they have these different expressions, and what it has to do with is that at least the parts of the right person that they were conscious of didn't show up as they got to know her. So they may have found out that their lives were going in two completely different directions and there was no way to make this into one shared life. Or they might have found out that her values were incompatible with his values. They don't have to be the same, but they need to be compatible. And he may have found out, no, this is never going to work. Or he might have found out that he couldn't afford her, which will be his conclusion if he doesn't think he can give her what he thinks she needs. I can't afford her. Or it may be that she just had this side of her that would go on a rage monster campaign that he couldn't deal with or wasn't willing to deal with, or that as attracted to her as he was, she made him feel like a smaller man. She didn't bring out the best in him. He wasn't happy when he was with her. Or that he couldn't make her happy. It didn't matter what he did, he couldn't make her happy. So the process, if you can hear it, the process is seeing, do these different things fit in? He's looking to see, does it add up? And he'll be so bummed if it doesn't. He's not trying to not commit. He's looking for it to add up to be worth it. And that's the thing ultimately that it comes down to, that who the women that men marry are the women that they have concluded their life will be better off by spending it with her, that they will be ahead by spending it with her. Okay, so they're really, really actually smart about marriage, really amazingly intelligent about it, and I'm grateful for that because Greg knew way sooner than I did that I should marry him. I was the slow one. He was the one talking about our grandchildren on our first date, and we don't have any grandchildren yet, but it has been more than 23 years since that first date. All right, so before I take your questions, let me give you the information I promised to give you about how to get a bonus for registering into this workshop. So first of all, in case you don't know it, we have a particular philosophy in pricing our graduate programs where we charge what it costs to put on that course at the size that the course is likely to be, rather than the size that we would hope that it would be, which is how we used to price our courses and how we created a lot of debt. So we charge what the course is likely to cost. That's what we share amongst the people who are there. And we don't inflate that in order to give some artificial kind of discount. We do give a discount on our entry-level programs because we're willing to take hit on that for people to find out the value of our work. But our graduate programs are priced at what they cost. So the 3-day Queen's Code for Relationships is $1,195 or 7 monthly payments of $176. And like I said, I'm leading it at the end of May in Dallas, but it is available other places throughout the year and where we have our workshops. And you can find that information on the dates and locations page at understandmen.com. Now, if you register with the promotional code that I'm about to give you, what you'll receive is a free copy of the Cough It Up Tell It class. It's called Coughing Up the Truth. And it normally costs $97 for this recording of the teleclass. And this is one that I've been wanting to do for a really long time to teach people how to prepare for telling the truth and what to expect when you told the truth and why the truth is always disruptive and how to prepare yourself so that you're in the best shape possible to have space for how the person that you're telling the truth to might react to that. Because we normally finally sort of we kind of burp up the truth. We don't mean to. We're just finally pressured into it, and it bursts out of us, and we're not prepared, and they're not prepared, and it can get really ugly or really nasty or just fall apart or blow up really fast, and we're not prepared for it. And so the long phrase of this is cough it up, blow it up, clean it up. And the Coughing Up the Truth teleclass talks about what kind of truths you might cough up and how you would prepare for that, what blowing up looks like and how to expect that and not resist that and actually welcome that. And then what are the things that you might be doing in order to clean up the mess after you've blown it up in order to create a new future that's way better than the one you had before you coughed up the truth. So this information is key for any kind of long-term relationship, any kind of partnership, and so we offer it to you because it goes with what you'd be working on in the Queen's Code for Relationships. So how you get the free Cough It Up teleclass is when you go to understandman.com and choose your dates and how you want to pay for the Queen's Code for Relationships. When you get to the checkout page, there's a place for you to put in a promotional code. And the promotional code is QCRAA. QCR, so Queen's Code Relationships, Allison Armstrong. So QCRAA is what you would put in the promotional code. Oh, I'm sorry. You also have to put in your shopping cart the Cough It Up teleclass from the products page. So, and when you do that and then you put the promotional code in, it will take out the $97 that that costs. So that's how you will get that for free. Okay. So I think that's all the information that I really needed to give you. We are coming right up on the end of the hour. Adrian, is there anything that you would like to add? Anything you wish that I had said or should have included, or anything else you want them to know about what it'll be like to have this course in Dallas at the end of May?
No, just that if they are interested in reviewing or if they have a friend that they want to bring with them who needs to take the Queen's Code for Life first, then the only course that they can take in time is the one in New York, and that's May 15th, 16th, and 17th, and there's only 6 spots left in that course. So if you do want to take Queen's Code for Life as a reviewer, or you want to get your friend in so she can come to the Queen's Code for Relationships and be with you and Allison, then make sure you register as soon as possible for the Queen's Code for Life in New York. And it's at a great Homewood Suites in Times Square near the half-price ticket booth, and they have a great rate, and so it could be a great weekend. But there's just 6 spots left, so definitely register.
Okay,
that.
And that'll be 2 weeks before we're doing the Queen's Code for Relationships. All right, great. Thank you, Adrian. So I'm going to give the microphone to everybody now so we can say goodnight. Thank you for being here with me. It was really awesome. All right, good night, everybody.